This is Mel Rojas Jr. You're listening to H10, Hanshin Tigers English News.
The year of the Tiger, the year of your Hanshin Tigers, and the year of H10, Hanshin Tigers English News. Thanks for joining us for episode 140. I'm your host, T-Ray, and joining me from Paradise on Earth, Hawaii, is Sanjay. How you doing, buddy?
Aloha, brother T-Ray. I'm doing very well and happy to be here in the year of the Tigers.
Yes, and spring training is underway, which means that we're actually talking about baseball on the field. Today is February the 9th, in case you missed it, and we are thankful to have you along for today's show. We are going to break down for you how 2022 is going to be different from 2021. So strap in and join us for this great ride. It's time for the Rumors and News.
Rumors and News. Rumors and News.
It's a very short list today, Sanjay. We've got 3 points on here. The first one being that, yes, COVID is hitting Japan hard, and it does extend out to the Hanshin Tigers. Fortunately, in some ways, it's only one player this time that we need to report. I believe it was February the 4th that Kento Itohara tested positive for COVID. So this is his second time being hit with the virus. No word on how serious it is, but I'm assuming that, or no, actually, there was word on that. It was very mild. He does have to spend some time quarantining. So he will be away from the team and practicing for a while. On the flip side of that, Raul Alcantara, who came a little bit late, I think he arrived on January the 30th or something like that.
Yeah, 30th, 31st. Yeah.
Yeah. So he got here before camp, but he, of course, had to quarantine. He made it out of quarantine yesterday and was down in Okinawa. That would be February the 8th. And so he will be joining practice. I'm assuming he probably won't be on the mound for any practice games, at least for a couple of weeks. But the fact is, he's here. He's getting in some training with the team. And that's a good thing. Lastly, provided the borders are open enough for Team Taiwan to make it into Japan at the start of March, which is questionable at this point, there are going to be a couple of practice matches, friendly matches between Samurai Japan and Taiwan. Now, the team that won the 2020 or 2021 Olympic gold medal is not the team that is going to be fielded for that. They actually choose kind of a new roster, and this is not necessarily a roster that's going to be in the next WBC or anything, but just guys that could potentially be there the next time we have meaningful international competition. And so new manager Hideki Kuriyama, former manager of the Nippon Ham Fighters, has taken a good look at a couple of our guys to possibly join in those two games against Taiwan on March the 5th and 6th. Those will be at Tokyo Dome, by the way, if they do go down. Those two players would be number 5, Koji Chikamoto, and number 8, Teruaki Sato. What are your thoughts on that, Sanjay?
Well, I say that Chikamoto obviously is a top pick because of who he is and what he's accomplished and what he can do to the other guys, to the other team. Sato, the proviso that Kuriyama mentioned was that he needs to have sort of a breakout spring, if you will, in order to be selected, but that he's a very viable candidate. And I think that it'd be good for Sato to actually experience this international competition. So I'm all for it.
Absolutely. I think it'll light a fire under him. And the thing about these competitions too, is that it's a competition, well, on the field, it's against other countries. But first of all, it's a competition for Sato to be the best third baseman or the best right fielder or whatever that they could choose. And that's going to be really tough, especially at the hot corner, because they've already got Okamoto and Murakami there, right? So I'm assuming that if he does get playing time, it's going to be in right field, in which case he's going to have to beat out. Well, I guess the good news is there's no Seiya Suzuki to worry about. But yeah, there will be other guys obviously vying for that. All right, before we get into some recapping, the first time in 2022, by the way, we've got to thank some of our sponsors. So the first shout out that we have is for the defending champion, Yakult Swallows and their English podcast. No, it's not affiliated with the team, but the Tokyo Swallows, the Tsubame Gumi, they have a great podcast in English. And congrats to you guys on the Nippon Ichi. And I'm looking forward to another great year of competition against your team. But we on the podcast airwaves are friends. Also want to thank Anita. I want to thank Zorni and William Schofield, who are on the Koshien tour. Please open up the borders and please let people back into Koshien so we can take in a ball game together. I've got Ian Hayden on the digital platform and also Joe out in Wakayama. Thanks to you, we're able to podcast through 2022. And now for the first recaps of 2022, we have got a couple of games to talk about here, Sanjay. One of them was us against ourselves, and the other one was us against another team. So first of all, on February the 5th, we had an intra-squad game. It's the old Kohaku-sen. And if you're not aware of the translation, that is basically the whites versus the reds, representing, I'm assuming, the Japanese flag. Well, so that means that the whites wear the home uniforms and the reds, if you will, wear the road uniforms. This was the debut of the brand new 2022 Road Threads, and they looked awesome. I loved it.
They were sharp looking for sure.
Yes. So anyways, the whites won this game. It kind of went into extra innings, though it shouldn't have. It was supposed to be a 5-inning game. Okay, so just like not a full game, whatever. Fujinami got the start on one side. And in the second inning, he was facing the number 4 hitter, Teraki Sato, who went 10 pitches against Fujinami. And then he smoked one over the left field wall for the first run of the game. And so a 1-0 lead for the Reds.
And the first homer in Nippon professional baseball of the year.
There you go. Yeah. And then actually Sato scored the second run. It wasn't off of Fujinami. It was another pitcher, but he hit a double, and then Kinami hit a triple. I'm going to put an asterisk next to that because I've noticed that in spring training, the outfielders don't let balls drop in front of them. They dive for almost everything. And so I think it was Shimada dove for it, didn't get it, and it rolled past him. So it was a triple, but it could have been either caught or single. But anyways, a run is a run. So after 5 innings, the score was 2-0. It was supposed to be that the Reds then won the game. The whites would have had to do the fungo of death. Desunoku, right? After the scrimmage, that was the rule. But I guess they begged for one more inning, and wow, they made it count. So they loaded the bases up, and then Ryuhei Obata hit a gyakuten? It wasn't sayonara, was it? Because it was the top of the inning, but it was a come from behind, bases loaded, inside the park, home run. Pretty cool stuff. I mean, it was just great to see Obata hit with a bit of authority. He got it over center field, which is great. I don't know if he will hit any home runs this year, even if he is a starter, but he's got a lot more pop than we've seen from him ever before. So that was cool. So it was a 4-2 win for the whites, and that means that the Reds had to do the fungo of death after the game. Any thoughts on this one? Did you see any highlights or anything, Sanjay?
I saw some highlights. And I have to say that Sato's swing looked really good. He was hitting with authority, as you say. And also, I think for that inside the park home run by Obata, I think Chikamono may have been playing in a little bit. And it was just outside of his reach as he was trying to do the Willie Mays and go straight back. So, as he said, he was going for it with a dive. He was going for it. And he couldn't get there. So it was good. It was fun to watch real baseball again, even if they're playing against each other.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, those are fun games. They're also a little bit hard as fan. Well, not hard, but kind of confusing because you're like, you're cheering for the pitcher and you're cheering for the hitter. And you're cheering for them to score runs and you're cheering for them to not score runs all at once, right? You don't want anyone to win. You just want everyone to do well. And it's impossible for everyone to do well. So the trend actually continues in the next game. Speaking of outfielders kind of going for it and not quite doing it. And also speaking of Sato doing it. We faced the Fighters yesterday. And this would be Big Boss's debut. Tsuyoshi Shinjo, the manager of the Fighters, his debut as manager in a game against another team, even though it mattered for absolutely nothing. And his decision to make his starting lineup out of basically, what did you call it again, Sanjay?
It was like a garapo machine, which is like a wooden bingo ball roller wheel.
Right. And so he really had no set plan on who he was going to play and in what order and at what position. And so a lot of their guys played out of position, at least for the first, what, four innings of the game, you said?
First four innings, yeah. Actually, there's a side note to that, is that that got up on wheel was malfunctioning. So the batting order was decided by the head coaches or the coaches. Mm-hmm. But the fielding was reverse of the infielders and outfielders playing out of position. And also, none of the players knew what positions they were playing or where they were hitting until it was announced at game time. So everybody was like on edge the whole time.
Yeah.
And it gave them a good sense of, heightened awareness.
Yeah, that's kind of cool. And I wouldn't be against it, but I also think like, well, I'm also okay with how the Tigers did things. You know, we're all business on the very first day. And this was the order for us. It was Chikamoto, followed by Kinami, Oyama, Sato, Itoi, Umeno, Obata, Egoshi, Onodera, who played first base, and then Oyokawa was the starter. The interesting thing here is that the media got all excited because Sato was fourth and Oyama was third, and they asked Yano, and he was all like, I did this because this is what you guys want. You media want this story, and so I did it. And they're like, are you thinking about putting Sato as the number four hitter in the season? He said, I told Sato he's got to win it, and he didn't win it today. I gave it to him. So this one was for you, is basically what he said. And it's like, you can really sense that Yano is feeling free and easy this season. You know, he's a lot more relaxed than he was last year. All right, yes, so let's get to the action now. So the top of the first was not a good one for Oyokawa. A couple of walks, a couple of hits. They got three runs. Again, I think their second and third runs came on a hit that if the left fielder had reached it, would have ended the inning with just one run against. But it was another diving miss. He settled in after that for a couple of innings of clean ball. Sato got an RBI single in the bottom of the first. Oyama with a solo home run in the bottom of the third against his old mate, our former player, Masaki Tanigawa, who is now a reliever for the Fighters. We traded him away for, I think it was a bag of baseballs. I'm not really sure. we didn't get anything in return for him.
We didn't get anything.
Yeah. Which is the same thing that happened with us getting Yamamoto, us getting a few other guys, right? Okay. Anyhow, so Masumi Hamachi gave up a run in the top of the fifth on three hits. Shoki Murakami gave up a solo home run in the top of the sixth. And then Atsuki Yuasa with two out doubles in the top of the ninth to give up the sixth run. Tigers lose 6-2. Everyone is saying, there you go, Big Boss is the man. But honestly, he even said after the game, he's like, I don't think I was even needed today. You know, the guys just did it. And I don't think he made any decisions really, other than just to randomly place the players in positions they weren't comfortable with. But, you know, the media needs a story. They want to give him credit for the win, whatever. It's not about wins in the spring anyways.
True, true.
So any thoughts on the game?
Yeah, well, I liked Chikamoto's first at-bat, which was an infield hit followed by a stolen base, the old Chikamoto double, basically. And, you know, he's going to continue to Chikamoto his way through the season, I hope. I also thought that Sato's at-bat, when he went oppo RBI single on a breaking ball, he stayed back, which is something he wasn't doing at the end of last year. So that was good. And his second one, when he pulled a double to right side, he was a little bit off balance because of an off-speed pitch. But even then, his hand stayed back and he was able to hit it with authority. So I'm liking what I'm seeing from Sato so far. I know it's too early in the season. The pitches probably aren't doing that well. So, they're not at max speed or anything. But I was encouraged by what I saw both Chikamoto and Sato do. And actually, the other surprise was Itoi. Itoi's been ripping the ball really hard. So, maybe he's going to be, he's going to force Yano's hand into playing him some more.
It's entirely possible, yeah. I would agree with you on all those points, and particularly Sato has just looked like a different hitter. Like, he does not look like he wants to crush the ball every time. He's looking at a lot more pitches. When he does swing, he's missing the ball way less. So he fouled off a whole bunch of Fujinami pitches in that intra-squad game. And again, like you said, in this one, neither of the pitches that he put into play for hits against the Fighters were like straight down the pipe or anything. I mean, they were both kind of breaking pitches that may have even been out of the zone, but he still got his bat on it and got enough wood on it to push the ball to the outfield. The second one with quite a bit of authority, I might add. So yeah, really encouraging stuff there. I don't expect a ton out of the pitchers early on. Like, I don't expect them to shut down the other teams completely, because the pitchers are going in with an agenda, right? I mean, they're either working on getting more movement on their fastball or seeing how much bite they have on their breaking stuff or whatever. They're not up to full speed on any of their pitches. And so I'm not really surprised that they scored 6 runs against us. And I'm not really disappointed in any of those pitchers either. I have seen a lot of other fans, like Japanese fans. Well, I shouldn't pick on Japanese, but let's face it, Hanshin fans are Japanese fans. But I've seen a lot of other fans that are already saying, like, oh man, Fujinami, he just doesn't have it this year. I mean, look at how he did against Sato in that at bat, or, you know, like his fastball wasn't what it needs to be. And it's like, dude, it's February 5th. Go really? To the drugstore, buy yourself some chill pills and chug them, because it's just not time for that. It just isn't. Seriously. All right. Well, the next time that we are back with episode 141 or 142 or whatever it might be, we will have more game action to recap for you. And so look forward to that. We do have the schedule up on H10. If you go to the spring training information post, you will find who the team is playing and when. And now it's time for the first time in 2022 for Yano.
Wait, what did you do? Was that on purpose? Pull the whole outfield? Yano? Who's that? I've never heard of him before. Who is that? Yano?
Man, it can only be one thing, and we never expect to have this corner this early in the season, but January 31st, man, it shocked the entire Tigers nation. Akihiro Yano, our manager, announced before spring training started
that the day before
this season will be his last. He is stepping down at season's end. So this is his fourth year as the team manager, and it will also be his last. And I think that probably explains a little bit of why he looked so relaxed when talking to the media. But give me some of your thoughts, Sanjay, on this announcement, both the announcement itself and the timing of it.
Yeah, well, the announcement itself took me by surprise, as I'm sure it took pretty much everybody that knows anything about professional baseball, not just Tiger Nation, because it just isn't done. Not in this way, anyway.
Yeah.
Having said that, and you and I had a little bit of a banter back and forth on this too, if you think about real world equivalents, there's nothing that unusual about announcing that, you know, this is your last year in whatever job, and that's may or may not affect the people that are working with you or working for you. So, you know, I'm not as outraged or think it's such a horrible idea like all the old school people seem to think. So all the old baseball, you know, grumpy old men. Yeah. So I'm thinking that this actually makes sense if you think about the possible scenario of if the Tigers really stumbled out of the gate or did really well and then went into a funk or whatever, the people are going to be calling for Yano's head if he hadn't announced this.
Yeah.
He's already announced it. So there can't be any more distractions like that. And so it's a preemptive strike, and it may be the only thing that he could have done given his position. And so I'm okay with it.
So I think like his back is kind of against the wall in that a lot of times, like if you look back to 2008, right, and the epic collapse of the Tigers team that year, and Okada took responsibility and stepped down as manager, even though he was doing a great job as team manager. I think he was popular with the players, with the fans, and he stepped down to take responsibility for what had happened on the field and in the standings. And I think Yano was kind of in a similar position in 2021. I think there was some talk. Some people were saying, look, like he needs to step down because he didn't win the pennant, which I think is ludicrous. But honestly, like 2022, it's make or break for the Yano Tigers anyways. If he does not win the pennant this season, he's leaving. I mean, there is no way that anybody, media, front office, fans, anybody is going to accept anything but a pennant this year. And so I think in that sense, yeah, it was that preemptive strike. But I think this also gives the media their stories in October or whenever the team either falls out of contention or wins the pennant, right? I mean, if they win the pennant, they're going to say, well, you know, that announcement back on January 31st, that's what did it. The players rallied together and said, we're going to send him out as the man. Or if they stumble, they're going to say, well, you know, that announcement backfired on him and look at what happened. The players lost their motivation. And I don't think either of those is 100% accurate, but it does give the media a very easy story.
Yeah, that's absolutely what it is. Exactly.
But, you know, I think it does allow Yano to play, to manage without feeling much pressure this season. It's not that he doesn't want to win, but, you know, I think it's going to allow him to be more relaxed in front of the media. I think that this also allows the front office to really start to think further down the line about who they want post Yano. I've said this before and I'll say it again. I think that the Tigers, and I think honestly, all NPB teams need to have a GM in place. Some of the teams do, but you need the long-term vision guy up in the office, or, you know what I mean? Like looking down on the team and seeing the helicopter view. And then you need the manager down on the field doing the day-to-day stuff. And Hanshin doesn't have that. So I was listening to Tigers Cast, and one of the points that they made kind of hit home with me. You know, I think about the players that were drafted just like a few months ago, and Yano drafted them because he sees something in them and wants them to be a part of the team because his vision for the Hanshin Tigers is this. But next year's guy, whoever it is, might say, no, I'm taking the team in a different direction. I don't really see the need for speed, or I don't really envision us needing this many left-handed pitchers or whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, these guys that were drafted, they've got 1 year to find their place, or next year they may not have a place simply because of a change of manager. So I think that's really unfortunate for them. But that said, I think you and I agree. We love Yano. We're rooting for Yano this year. And honestly, like, I'm kind of rooting for the impossible to happen, that the team will win it all and he will relent and he'll say, okay, I'll come back for one more year.
We'll cross that bridge when we get to it.
Yes. Yes, indeed we will. All right. Let's push ahead into the hot topic.
Hot topics.
So 2022, my man, is going to be different from 2021 because we are going to win the pennant. But actually, we are not even going to talk about the pennant itself in this segment. I want to talk about what things are going to be different between 2022 and the way baseball was played on the field and in the rule books in 2021. The biggest thing, Sanjay, is that extra innings are coming back, as you are well aware. 2021 games only went 9 innings, and actually 2020 games only went a max of 10 innings. So this is the first time in 3 seasons that we are allowing up to 12 innings if a winner is not determined. So I'm pretty happy about that because fewer ties means wins will determine the pennant winner that much more than it did in 2021. Yeah, thanks, stupid rules, because we had more wins than the Swallows, but they finished ahead of us. What's that? Okay, rant over. But what are the implications then of extra innings being, I'm adding S's to everything, extra innings being back? I've got 3 things that I could see. One is that the closer is going to be important, but so are the extra bullpen pieces. We're going to see the bullpens being used a lot more because of not only the extra innings, but the possibility of extra innings, which means you're going to have these guys warming up in the bullpen that much more, thinking, well, what if there is a 10th inning? What if there is a need for 3 extra innings? Whereas this past year, it was like, well, you know what I mean? Like in close games, it's like, okay, we've got the 8th and 9th. That's going to be Iwazaki and Suarez, and everybody else gets the night off. Now it's like, well, if we use the 8th and 9th, if we use our setup guy and our closer, but the game's still tied, who's going in? Who can we count on? And that's huge. So, you know, we talked about the loss of Suarez before and how much that means to the team or how much it's going to hurt the team. But I think part of it will be compensated by the fact that he's not going to pitch the last inning of as many games, or pardon me, the closer won't pitch the last inning of as many games in 2022 as they did in 2021. So whoever we have as our closer, hopefully he'll hold the fort in the 9th or the 10th whenever we elect to use him. And then those extra couple innings, if we need them, we've got guys that are going to be able to keep the zeros coming and our bats will come through.
Totally agreed.
Yeah. The second thing that I could see is that starters are going to likely be expected to go deeper. So I'm thinking as manager last year and the year before, I'm thinking, well, this game is ending after 9 and we've got our seventh, eighth, ninth inning guys set up, and we can actually, maybe we can push this guy into the sixth. And so five innings out of our starter is enough. And the starter is even going in thinking, all I've got to do is get us to the sixth or seventh. Whereas this year, I think, because we're going to want to preserve the bullpen more, the starters are going to have to go in with a lot more of a mentality of, I've got to be more pitch efficient. I've got to try to get deeper into games, preferably 7 to 8 innings. And so that is going to change as well, I believe.
Agreed with that too.
And we're going to see maybe more pitchers reaching the benchmark of 143 innings pitched for them to qualify for titles. So that'll be interesting as well. Well, anyways, the third big thing that I see changing with the extra innings coming into place is that the late inning strategies are also going to change. So last year's Hanshin Tigers, we had a ton of pinch runners. It was crazy. The eighth and ninth innings, it just seemed like we were emptying the bench, using every last, you know, extra inch of speed that we get on the base paths to try and push that extra run across, or the insurance run, or whatever it might have been. And we're not going to be able to do that anymore, you know, because I think that we're going to have to play again. We'll have to look at various scenarios and say, well, if we replace Marte in the bottom of the seventh on the base paths, yeah, sure, his place may not come up again by the bottom of the ninth, but if we have to go a 10th inning, it will come around. Okay, so then all of a sudden, you know what I mean? Like, I think there's less need for pinch runners, more need for pinch hitters. Who do you think, Sanjay? Let's actually talk, let's name names. Who are some players that you would look to be our pinch hitters that we can count on in 2022? Maybe that didn't get as much opportunity last year.
Well, I don't know about how many at-bats he got, but, you know, maybe there's a place for Haraguchi again, because he's, I'd be scared to face him in a late inning situation.
Yeah, I would say Haraguchi, sure. I think that we probably need a couple of options from the right and a couple of options from the left is probably the way I see things. So right. I would say, and this is just, I'm just going for kind of standard answers, but what about Yokawa?
Mm.
I mean, this is a guy that he's shown flashes of that. I think it was it 2018 or 19 that as a pinch hitter, I think it was 19. He was quite good. He was quite dangerous. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, he found that clutch switch on his back or whatever, and somebody flicked it on for him, because that year, and it seems that year alone, he was actually quite good. But I could see him being, you know, that threat as well. And he's got the power as well. So he, you know, if we need the extra base hit or the home run or whatever, he's a threat. And then from the left side, I think like Itoi is going to be a lot more used than he was this year in that.
If he isn't forced to start, or if he doesn't force Yano to start him, like I was saying earlier.
Correct. Well, I'm sure he won't start 143 games.
That's true, yeah.
That much won't happen unless somehow he finds his inner Fukudome. And then I don't know if this is a canned answer or not, but what about Takayama? Do you think that there's a comeback in the works for him to be maybe the pinch hitter, or would it not be him? Like, I don't know. I hearken back to 2019 when he hit that pinch hit 12th inning walk-off grand slam home run against the Giants at Koshien.
Yeah.
Man, that was a great moment. But I don't know. Anyone else that you could see being the lefty pinch hitter extraordinaire?
Well, I don't know about extraordinaire, but he was using this role last year as Kinami. He's got a bit of a bat too. So,
true.
Mm-hmm. You know, if he's not starting, then he will be one of the options to call upon.
Okay, and then dark horse for me would be Itayama, who did it a little bit last year as well.
Mm-hmm.
He seems to have like he really wants it. I don't know if he's got the skill level, but he definitely has the heart to do it.
Yeah, the thing is, there aren't enough roster spots on the bench for all these people to be in there.
I know, right? Like there is in our hearts, but not on the bench. So
yeah, exactly.
there's that restriction that we have to work around, or I guess Yano does, not us. Okay. And obviously with there being a greater need for more real pinch hitters, I think there's also going to be fewer defensive subs, maybe until the ninth inning or even later, instead of doing things a little bit earlier. And so I think this might mean more playing time, more at bats for some of these guys that have the good stick, but maybe not the great glove. And so we're looking more at guys like Marte, and even like if Itohara is the starting second baseman, I don't think he'll be replaced for a very long time in the game, simply because his bat is that much more valuable.
Well, I think we may learn more about how Yano intends to deal with the situation as we see some of the games playing out, because it just might be the total opposite. He might just say, we're going to go play defense out there, and we're going to make those subs early and, you know, try and protect that one run.
Let's see how the defense does, right?
I mean, yeah, that's true.
That's another, of course, area the team needs improvement on. And I mean, we could talk on it, you know, to no end about this stuff. Toritani did a little bit of a newspaper column for, I think, for Nikkan Sports. Forgive me, Shinbun Gaisha, if I got you wrong. But he said that, you know what, it's not the number of errors, it's the quality of the error, if you will.
Yeah.
It's the repercussions that the error has. So I don't know, that was just interesting to hear as well. Okay, let's look at some other differences between last year and this year. I believe this is not a difference, but rather a same. That would be that the import rule, I think, still allows them to carry five on the top squad, but four on the bench at any given time. And this year, because we only have two position player imports, import position players, those being Mel Rojas Jr. and Jeffrey Marte. Well, at the very least, we've got two position players and three pitchers then on the top squad. And currently, we only have three pitchers in town. So kind of by default, it would be Gunkel, Alcantara, and Chen, along with Rojas and Marte. Of course, Aaron Wilkerson and Kyle Keller are expected to come whenever the borders open up, because they're completely shut down now from the U.S. But anyhow, that's going to be interesting to see how we do things, because now we don't need to have a position player down on the farm. I think there's maybe, I don't know if there's less pressure on Rojas and Marte, because I think that Yana will be quite liberal about even benching them or even farming them and going with a 1-4 format, whether it's injury or slump. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see that. Okay, then roster limits, I believe, are remaining the same. I could see a scenario in which they expand simply because, at least right now, COVID cases in NPB seem to be like a daily occurrence. And so if they just keep things the same, I think it's just going to be complete chaos all across the league. So we'll see. It might be a little bit more flexible in 2022. Of course, the biggest difference between last season and this season is that there is no mid-season Olympic break. And I think there was an interesting theory about our boy Sato Teriyaki, that he had his sophomore slump in the second half of last season because of the Olympic break. That was kind of his off-season between rookie year and sophomore year. And so if that's the case, great. I mean, this season, it's 143 games start to finish. The season starts March 25th and ends, I think the last scheduled game right now is like September 19th, which is a full like month and a half earlier than last season ended.
Wow.
Of course, you know, there'll be some makeup games. And so I'm assuming that probably till the end of September, we won't have game 143, but that's still much earlier than last year. There's no break except for the All-Star break. So that's going to cause the season, I think, to play out a little bit differently as well.
So we'll actually have a postseason on October.
Yes. So we'll have a Mr. October that actually means something, as opposed to last year where it was really a Mr. November that mattered.
Yeah.
Okay. And then the last one that I have on here is that, at least at present, it looks like fans are going to be allowed into the games in much greater numbers than in years past. There's no plan right now in place for like a hard low limit like there have been in the past. And there is no plan to have games without fans in the stands, which they had in both 2020 and at times in 2021. So my question, not necessarily for you to answer, but do our Tigers players perform better with a full house in attendance or with fewer people or with no people?
Well, I'm going to say my belief is that the fans make a huge difference. And so our Tigers will play better at home with fans, with a full house, than without.
You know, man, until 2019 or until 2020, really, I always felt like players were just, they're just paying lip service, man. When in hero interviews and after games, they're like, yeah, you know what? The fans are the ones that carry that ball over the fans. Or, you know, it's because the fans, I do it for the fans. This is why I do it. And I was like, are you kidding me? You're doing it for the $1 million or the millions of bucks. And I'm talking not just NPB. I'm talking, you know, across all of professional sports. And now that we've seen professional sports being played in empty arenas, stadiums all around the world, I come to see that those words were not just words. I'm sure they really meant, and I'm sure they mean it even more now that they've experienced the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause it's just got to be a weird, eerie feeling, you know, to be in the batter's box with the game on the line and you could hear a pin drop. I mean, they probably never experienced that even when they were in like little league and stuff. At least
that's
there were probably
true,
dozens of people saying, come on, do it. And now they had nobody except for their teammates. So I think that's going to be really interesting. By the way, I think that preseason game tickets at Koshien and Kyocera go on sale today. So if you're in Japan listening to this, if you're planning to go to a game, go to the Tigers website and try to find yourself some tickets. I think I'm going to try to make it out to one preseason game this year, but we'll see how this whole COVID thing plays out.
I'm jealous.
We'll get you there, man. We'll get you there. All right. It is time for predictions.
What's going to happen? What's the record going to be? What's going to happen? What's the record going to be? What's going to happen? What's the record going to be? What's going to happen? What's the record going to be?
See the future? Yes, they can. Check it out. H10 predictions. See the future? Yes, they can. Check it out. H10 predictions.
What's going to happen? What's the record going to be?
What the heck are we predicting? We are not predicting a starting lineup. We're not predicting a pitching rotation. We're not predicting the team's record, and we're not predicting the standings. But it's time for you to start thinking about predicting the standings, everybody, because H10's annual Central League Prediction Contest is going to be back in 2022. I will make the official announcement either in episode 141, 42, or 43. It'll be soon, probably before the end of February. So stay tuned for those details. The one thing you need to know is that this year, there absolutely will be a prize awarded. So even if you don't nail it, you have a chance at winning if you're the closest to the actual standings. And I'll explain how I calculate that when I give you the details for this. So Sanjay, start to think about it. Who have you got in first place? No, you don't even have to think about that. That's a no-brainer. Think about your second through sixth. All right. There's no pressure, though, by the way, on anybody to pick the Tigers to finish first. That's our job. Okay. You do what you think is right. Well, thank you everybody for joining us at H10 Hanshin Tigers English News. If you have not gotten your fill of Tigers News, we are going to the post-show show right away, so you can check that out. It's in the show notes. It's on the YouTubes. You can check out our other YouTube stuff. We got the Joe Gunkel interview that is all up on YouTube with subtitles. Jimakutsuki. Yeah. We've also got a Mel Rojas Jr. fresh interview that's coming out probably in the weeks to come, so stay tuned for that. You can check us out, of course, on the website, on Twitter, on Instagram, on Facebook, as well as YouTube. Check all those details in the show notes. I want to thank Lemon Music Studio for the awesome new theme music. And as always, Show, the pod mixer. We can't do this without you. Thanks, Sanjay, for joining me today.
Thanks for having me, and Ganbare Hanshin Tigers.
Catch you all next time. Go Tigers!